This is Audible.
Random House Audio presents The Duquesne Diet by Pierre Duquesne. Read for you by Nicholas Bell.
For Sasha and Maya, for Maya and Sasha, my two children, for the second life they have offered me, in return for the gift of life I have given to them. To Christine, my wife, without whom this endeavour could never have even been imagined. To Sylvia and Maurice, who still speak through me. Preface. A decisive encounter, or the man who only liked meat. My first contact with obesity goes back to the time when, as a very young doctor, I was practicing general medicine in the Montparnasse area in Paris, while also specializing in neurology for paraplegic children in Garches, just outside the capital. At that time, one of my patients was an obese, jovial, and tremendously cultivated publisher. I treated him regularly for a very trying case of asthma. One day, he came to see me, and once he was seated comfortably in an armchair that creaked under his weight, he said, "Doctor, I have always been satisfied with your treatment. I trust you, and I've come to see you today because I want you to make me lose weight." In those days, all I knew about nutrition and obesity was what my teachers had passed on at medical school, which amounted to simply suggesting low-calorie diets and miniature-sized meals that in every respect looked normal, but whose portions were so tiny that any obese person would smile and run a mile. For big eaters, used to living life to the full, the very idea of having to ration their happiness is preposterous. I declined, stuttering under the pretext that I knew nothing of the subtleties of this science. "What science are you talking about? I have seen every specialist in Paris, everyone who'd put me on a starvation diet. Since my teens, I've lost over 700 pounds, and I've put it all back on again. I have to admit that I have never been deeply motivated, and without realizing it, my wife has done me no great service by loving me despite all my extra pounds. I can't find any clothes that fit, and if I'm honest, I'm beginning to fear for my life." He then finished off with this last sentence, which alone changed the course of my professional life. "Put me on whatever diet you want, deprive me of whatever food you want, anything, but not meat. I like meat too much." And I can still remember how I replied without the slightest hesitation. "Fine. Since you like meat so much, come back tomorrow on an empty stomach and weigh yourself on my scales. For the next 5 days, eat nothing but meat. However, avoid fatty meats like pork, lamb, and the fattier cuts of beef, such as ribs or ribeye. Grill your meat and drink as much water as you can. Then come back in 5 days' time on an empty stomach and weigh yourself again." "Okay, you have a deal." 5 days later, he was back. He had lost almost 12 pounds. I couldn't believe my eyes, and neither could he. I felt somewhat concerned, but he looked great, more jovial than ever, saying he had rediscovered his well-being and had stopped snoring. He brushed aside my hesitations. "I'll keep it up. I feel on top of the world. It works, and it is a real treat." And so he left for another 5 days of eating meat, promising me he would have blood and urine tests done. When he came back, he had lost another 5 pounds, and jubilant, he showed me his test results. The levels were all perfectly normal. No sugar, no cholesterol, and no uric acid. In the meantime, I had gone to the medical school library, where I had spent time learning more about the nutritional characteristics of meat, extending my research into the great family of proteins, whose most prestigious member is meat. So when he returned 5 days later, still in tip-top shape and having shed another 4 pounds, I told him to add fish and seafood, which he accepted with good grace, because he had explored all that meat had to offer. When at the end of the first 20 days the scales registered a loss of 22 pounds, he did another blood test that turned out to be just as reassuring as the first one. Playing my ace, I had him add the remaining categories of protein that I still had left, throwing in together dairy products, poultry and eggs. However, to allay my concerns, I asked him to increase his water intake to 3 litres, about 5 pints a day. He then finally gave in and agreed to add vegetables, as I was beginning to worry that they had been absent from his diet for so long. When he came back 5 days later, he had not lost an ounce. He used this as an argument to request going back to his favourite diet, with all the categories of proteins he had developed a taste for, especially when he could eat as much of them as he liked. I let him have his way, but on condition that he alternated this diet with 5-day periods that would include vegetables, arguing that otherwise he risks vitamin deficiency, which he did not buy at all. However, he agreed to add vegetables because he was suffering from constipation due to the lack of fibre in his diet. This is how my alternative protein diet was born, as well as my interest in obesity and all categories of excessive weight gain. It changed the course of my studies and my professional life. Having opened my own practice, I patiently worked with this diet, constantly improving it and moulding it to create an eating plan that seems to me today to be both the most appropriate for the particular psychological makeup of overweight people and also the most efficient for weight loss based on real food. However, over the years, I have come to the bitter realization that weight loss diets do not stand the test of time, even when effective and followed properly. Lacking real stabilization, their results fade away, at best as a slow and imperceptible drifting off course. At worst, the weight piles back on again, usually due to stress, setbacks, or other problems. It was seeing how the vast majority of dieters inevitably lose this war against weight that led me to design a diet that consolidates the target weight, a bastion of defense against early setbacks and against the demoralization of regaining lost pounds that leads to self-loathing, to giving it all up, and to putting loads of weight back on. The job of this protective stage is to reintroduce, in successive layers, the basic elements of proper eating, and I designed it to control a body that, stripped of its reserves, would be bent on revenge. And, to allow enough time for this rebellious phase, and to make the transition acceptable, I fixed a precise time limit for this diet, easy to calculate and in proportion to the weight loss, 5 days for every pound lost. But here again, once the consolidation test was over, I saw old habits gradually creep back with the help of the pressures of metabolism. Above all, the inevitable resurgence of our need to compensate for life's miseries with those thick, creamy, sweet comfort foods that craftily overwhelm our defences. To put an end to this once and for all, I had to resort to a measure that is hard to even suggest to people, a rule that I dare call permanent, the kind of shackle that all overweight people, the obese of whatever size or the just plain chubby, detest and reject a priori because it is there for good. It goes against the grain, and their need to be impulsive and their absolute horror of being supervised. This rule, to be followed for the rest of one's life, but which guarantees real stabilization, is unacceptable unless it applies to only a single day a week, a day that is predetermined, whose structure cannot be changed or negotiated, but which bears amazing results. It was only then that I reached the promised land. Genuine, long-lasting, unequivocal success built on a quartet of successive diets, each decreasing in intensity, which time and experience had led me to interweave with each other to create a supportive and clearly signposted path that allows no escape. A short, strict attack diet, but with lightning results, followed by a cruise diet, alternating between forward thrusts and breaks, sustained by a consolidation stage, whose duration is proportionate to the weight lost. Finally, so that the weight you have achieved with such effort remains stable forever, there is a locking measure that is as specific as it is effective. A single day, once a week, devoted to dietary redemption, to keep the rest of the week in balance, provided it stays by your side, like a loyal guard dog, for the rest of your life. Finally, I achieved my first real lasting results. Now, I no longer had only a fish to offer, but a whole course on how to fish, a comprehensive program that allowed overweight people to be autonomous, lose weight quickly, keep it off for good, and to do all this by themselves. I have spent 30 years creating this beautiful tool by hand for a limited number of people. Today, with my pen, I want a wider public to be able to access my program and its interconnected diets. This program is intended for those of you who have tried everything, who have lost weight often, too often, and who are looking for a way not just to lose weight, but more importantly, to maintain those hard-earned results and live comfortably with the body you want and deserve. This is what I am offering you, in exchange for the effort that for a limited period of time you agree to make and keep up without fail. So I dedicate this book and this method to all my patients who were won over by my direct verbal advice, to my patients who have made my life as a doctor so fulfilling, my flesh and blood patients, young and old, men and women, and in particular, the very first of them, the overweight publisher. The birth of a four-step diet. The Dukin diet. 35 years have passed since the decisive encounter with the obese gentleman who changed the course of my life. Since then, I have devoted my work to nutrition and to helping the fat and the not-so-fat lose pounds and stabilize their weight. Like all my French medical colleagues, I was trained with Cartesian measure and balance as a rule, where calories were counted and low-calorie diets taught. Every type of food was allowed, but in moderate quantities. As soon as I arrived on the scene, this neat theory, based on the crazy hope that it was possible to reprogram overweight people and their eating excesses and turn them into methodical calorie counters, exploded into smithereens. Nowadays, what I know and practice I have learned and developed through direct daily contact with flesh and blood human beings, with men, but more often women, who have constant cravings to eat. So I very quickly realized that it was not by accident that a fat individual was overweight, that their gourmet appetite, their gluttony and apparent lack of restraint was a camouflage, concealing a need to find comfort in food, and that this need is all the more overwhelming as it is connected to our survival mechanisms, which are as archaic as they are instinctive. It soon became obvious to me that you could not make an overweight person lose weight and stay slim simply by giving them sound advice, even if that advice is based on common sense or scientific research, as the person has no other choice but to obey or try to wriggle out of it. Support is what an overweight person determined to lose weight really wants, and what they need from a counsellor or a method. Support so that they are not left alone to face the ordeal of dieting, which deliberately goes against their own instinct for survival. So, what the overweight individual is looking for is an outside will, a decision-maker, who walks on ahead of them offering guidance, providing them with instructions, more instructions, and ever more instructions. Because what the overweight individual most hates and simply cannot do is decide for themselves when and how they are going to deprive themselves of food. As for managing their weight, an overweight person will admit without shame, and why should there be any, that they are weak and even immature. I have known all kinds of overweight people, from every social background, ordinary people to the great and good, executives, bankers, even politicians, intelligent people, brilliant and eminent people, but who have all sat there in front of me and described themselves as being astonishingly weak when it comes to food, using it like a greedy child and unable to stop themselves. obviously most of them, from early childhood onwards, are found in food an easy escape valve, through which they can release excess tension, stress, and life's all-too-frequent disappointments. So any logical, reasonable, and rational instructions cannot stand up to, or not for long, the pressures of the body's archaic system of defence. During my years of practice, I have seen all the diets come and go that have hit the headlines and marked their era, and this has only reinforced my convictions. Since the early 1950s, I have counted 210 such diets. Some of them promoted and popularized by books that became worldwide successes, selling millions of copies. Diets such as the Atkins, the Scarsdale, the Montignac, and the Weight Watchers. These examples of typical diet books brought home to me just how much an overweight individual welcomes with open arms such regimes with their built-in instructions. Analyzing these diets and the reasons behind their incredible success, as well as my own practice and my daily contact with overweight people, observing the strength of their resolve at certain times in their lives, and then seeing how easily they lose heart when the results do not match their efforts. All this has convinced me that an overweight person who wants to lose weight needs a fast-acting diet that brings immediate results, fast enough to strengthen and maintain their motivation. And they also need precise goals to achieve, set by an outside instructor, with a series of various levels and crossing points to aim for, so that they can see their efforts and compare them with the results expected. Most of the spectacular diets that rocketed to success in recent years did in fact have that fast off-the-mark effect and delivered the promised results. Unfortunately, their instructions, guidance, and the levels or stages faded away once the book was read, leaving the overweight individual once again all alone on a slippery slope to confront their temptations. As the same causes lead to the same effects, the cycle would start all over again. Once the goal was reached, all these diets, even the most original and inventive, so far as the attack phase goes, turned out to be strangely mediocre. They abandoned their followers with the same old common-sense advice about moderation and balance that an ex-overweight person will never manage to follow. None of these famous diets has managed to find a way of protecting and guiding the individual during the period that follows their weight loss, of giving advice and precise, simple, and effective landmarks, just like those that have made their attack phase so successful. The overweight person who has lost weight and feels victorious knows instinctively that on their own and without any support they will not be able to preserve this victory. They also know that left to their own devices, the pounds will go back on, slowly at first, then more quickly, as they do nothing by halves. The overweight person who has just lost weight using a method that told them what to do needs a reminder of that symbolic presence, or of that hand that held theirs and guided them as they lost weight. They need instructions that are simple enough but specific, effective, and not too frustrating, so that they can be followed for the rest of their life. Dissatisfied with the majority of the main diets in vogue, which are only concerned with a dazzling but short-lived victory, and aware of how ineffective low-calorie diets are and common-sense advice that despite all the evidence hopes to reform overeaters into careful eaters, I developed my own weight loss diet, the alternating protein diet. This book explains my diet, which years of medical practice allow me to consider as being both the most effective and easy to follow diet available today. I realize that put this way, I may appear immodest, but I will take that risk because it is my most heartfelt conviction, and not saying so in the face of the growing scourge of weight control problems would amount to a failure to assist people in danger. This diet, with its first two actual slimming phases, is made up of a pair of diets that work like a two-speed engine, in which a pure protein attack phase first conquers the field and is then immediately followed by a period when these same proteins are combined with vegetables, a time when the body can recuperate and adjust to its weight loss. As time went by, and noticing how easily my patient's resolve slackened as soon as their goal was reached, and how, without any instructions and precise framework, they would backslide, this diet gradually turned into a comprehensive weight loss program. My program takes into account the overweight person's particular psychology and includes everything that is essential for the success of any weight loss which we have just described and which I can sum up as follows. The Dukan diet offers overweight people trying to lose weight a system with specific instructions that get them on track, with stages and objectives, leaving no room for ambiguity or deviation. Leaving aside fasting and protein powder diets, of all the diets based on real food that I have had the opportunity of working with, the Dukan diet is today the one that seems to me to produce the best results. The initial weight loss is substantial and sufficiently rapid to launch the diet and instill lasting motivation. The Dukan diet is a low-frustration diet. Weighing food portions and calorie counting are banned, and it allows you total freedom to eat a certain number of popular foods. The Dukan diet is not just a simple diet. It is a comprehensive slimming program, an integrated whole that you either take or leave. It can be broken down into four successive phases. The attack phase. An initial attack phase led by the pure protein diet, which creates a stunning kickstart, almost as quick as fasting or powdered protein diets, but without their drawbacks. The cruise phase. A cruise phase led by an alternating protein diet, when pure protein days alternate with pure protein plus vegetable days, which allows you to reach your chosen weight non-stop in one go. The consolidation phase. When the weight you have achieved is consolidated, a phase designed to prevent the rebound effect that occurs after any rapid weight loss. This is a period of high vulnerability when the body has a tendency to very easily regain those lost pounds. It has a very precise timescale, 5 days for every pound lost. The stabilization phase. Finally, and most importantly, permanent stabilization based on three simple safety measures that are easy to follow but indispensable if the weight loss is to be maintained. The Dukan diet has to be followed one set day per week, e.g. every Thursday, for the rest of your life. Do not use lifts or escalators, and take 3 tablespoons of oat bran a day. 3 rules that are indeed strict and non-negotiable, but sufficiently specific and effective that you can stick to them over such a long period of time. The theory behind the Dukan diet. Before looking at the diet in detail and explaining exactly how it works and why it is so effective, I believe it necessary to outline the whole program with its 4-phase structure to make clear to the reader from the outset precisely for whom the diet is intended, along with any possible contraindications. The Dukan diet is not only the most reliable and best performing of all current weight loss diets, it is a more ambitious, comprehensive program, a 4-stage system of instructions with decreasing strictness, which from day one takes complete charge of the overweight person and never ever lets them down. One of the major merits of the Dukan diet is its educational value. It allows obese people to learn in real life and with their own body the relative importance of each food group based on the order in which they are integrated into their diet. It starts with vital foods, then introduces in succession indispensable foods, essential foods, and important foods, finishing off with superfluous foods. The stated objective of the Dukan diet is to provide a system of perfectly interwoven instructions that are sufficiently clear and direct to set the dieter on the right track, avoiding the need for that never-ending effort of willpower which slowly undermines their determination. These instructions join together in 4 successive diets, the first 2 making up the actual weight loss phase, while the next 2 ensure that the weight loss achieved is consolidated, then permanently stabilized. The attack phase, the pure protein diet. This is the conquest phase, when the person starting the diet is extremely motivated. They are looking for a diet which, however arduous it might be, meets their expectations in terms of effectiveness and quick results, and allows them to tackle their weight problem head-on. This initial diet, great for a fast-track approach, is the pure protein diet. Its theoretical goal is to limit food to just one of the three food groups, namely proteins. In theory, except for egg whites, no food is 100% protein. This diet therefore selects and groups together foods whose composition is as close as possible to pure protein, such as certain kinds of meat, fish, seafood, poultry, eggs, and non-fat dairy products. Compared to all the low-calorie diets, this diet is a real war machine, a bulldozer, which, if followed without fail, crushes all resistance. It is by far the quickest and best performing of the safe diets based on real food. It is effective in the most difficult cases, in particular for premenopausal women suffering from water retention and swelling, or confirmed menopausal women starting the critical period of hormone treatment. It is just as effective with patients deemed to be resistant because they've tried and given up too many diets or aggressive courses of treatment in the past. The cruise phase, the alternating protein diet. As its name indicates, this diet works by alternating two diets, one after the other. The two diets interconnect. The pure protein diet is followed by the same diet to which any green or cooked vegetable is added. Each alternate cycle works like the injection combustion of a two-speed engine, burning up its calorie quota. Alternating diets. The first and second diets both allow you total freedom with regard to quantities. You can eat the authorized as much as you like foods at any time of day and in the combination and quantity that best suits you. This gives you both complete freedom and an effective way of neutralizing your hunger by eating. Satisfaction through quantity makes up for any lack of quality. Details are given later of the precise timing for the alternating pattern of these two diets, depending on how much weight you want to lose, how many diets you have already attempted, your age, and level of motivation. This attack phase, which often begins with an impressive weight loss, must be followed without a break until your target weight is reached. Although influenced in part by previous bad experiences, the alternating protein diet is still one of the diets least affected by resistance induced by previous attempts at weight loss. Consolidating the weight obtained. 5 days for every pound lost. After the conquest phase comes the soothing phase of the Dukan diet. Its essential purpose is to get you eating necessary foods again, while avoiding the traditional rebound effect that occurs after losing a lot of weight. Throughout the attack phase, and in an increasingly obvious manner as the diet continues, the body tries to put up resistance. It reacts to its reserves being plundered by gradually reducing its energy output, and above all, by assimilating and getting as much energy as possible from any food that is eaten. The triumphant fat person is therefore sitting on a volcano. Their body is just waiting for the right moment to win back its lost reserves. A large meal that before the diet would have had little effect will now, towards the end of the diet, have far-reaching consequences. This is why the diet opens up to include foods that are richer and more gratifying, but their variety and quantity will be limited, so that the body's metabolism can calm down, without running any risk, after it has worked so hard to lose weight. So, 2 slices of bread and 1 portion of fruit and cheese are introduced per day, along with 2 servings of carbohydrates, and above all, 2 celebration meals a week. The purpose of this first stabilization stage is therefore to avoid the explosive rebound that is the most immediate and one of the most frequent reasons for failure in weight loss diets. It is now necessary to introduce foods as significant as bread, fruit, cheese and some starches, as well as access to certain superfluous but extremely pleasurable dishes or foods. They must, however, be introduced in a certain order, with a set of instructions that are sufficiently precise and supportive to avoid the continual risk of slipping backwards. The role of this first bastion is to protect the weight loss. How long this phase lasts depends on how much has been lost. A very simple calculation based on 5 days for every pound lost. Ultimate long-term stabilization. Having lost weight and avoided any rebound by using the reassuring system of instructions and accepting certain constraints, the triumphant and often euphoric fat person knows instinctively that their victory is fragile, and that without support, sooner or later, and more often sooner rather than later, they will be at the mercy of their old demons. One thing they are even more certain of is that they will never acquire the moderation and measure when it comes to food that most nutritionists rightly recommend as the way guaranteed to maintain this weight loss. In this fourth phase, the Dukan diet offers the dieter the original attack phase, the pure protein diet, both its most effective and strictest weapon once a week, every Thursday, for the rest of their life. As paradoxical as this might seem, once the fat person has reached their desired weight, they are quite capable of making this effort one day a week because it is a very precise rule and lasts a very limited amount of time. And, above all, this specific and non-negotiable rule bears immediate fruit, but allows the dieter to eat normally for the other 6 days of the week without putting any weight back on. The Dukan diet summarized. The attack diet, pure proteins. Average length, 5 days. The cruise diet, 100 unlimited foods in alternation. Average length, 3 days for each pound you want to lose. The consolidation diet. Average length, 5 days per pound lost. The stabilization diet. One pure protein day every Thursday for life. No more lifts and escalators. 3 tablespoons of oat bran a day. Some useful information about nutrition. The CLP trio. Carbohydrates, lipids, proteins. All food, whether for humans or animals, provides an impressive number of edible foodstuffs, but these are all made up of only 3 nutrients: carbohydrates, lipids, and proteins. Every food gets its taste, texture, and nutritional interest from the particular way that these 3 elements combine. Calories are unequal in quality. Once upon a time, nutritional experts were only interested in the calorific value of foods and meals, and they based their weight loss diets entirely on calorie counting, which explains why for so long they failed without any apparent explanation. Today, most of them have abandoned this approach based exclusively on quantity, and instead are more interested in where the calories come from, the type of food providing them, the mix of nutrients that makes up the mass of chewed food, and even the time of day when the calories are taken in. It can be proved today that the body does not treat 100 calories provided by white sugar in the same way as it does 100 calories from oil or fish, and that the ultimate benefit of these calories, after they are assimilated, varies widely, depending on their origin. The same holds true for the time of day they are eaten. Although disputed in the past, it is now commonly agreed that the body burns up morning calories better than midday calories, and even better than evening calories. Leaving aside the fact that it is specifically adapted to the overweight person's specific profile, the effectiveness of the Dukan diet's 4-diet plan can be explained by the very careful selection of nutrients that make up the foods we recommend. In particular, the huge importance given to proteins during the attack phase, as well as during the long-term stabilization. It is very important, therefore, especially for anyone who does not have much knowledge of nutrition, to compare these three food groups so that the original way in which my program works can be better understood. Carbohydrates. This very widespread and much enjoyed food category has always supplied man, whatever the place, era or culture, with over 50% of his energy ration. For thousands of years, apart from fruit and honey, the only carbohydrates consumed by man were what we nowadays call slow sugars, cereal grains, starches, legumes, etc. What sets them apart is that they are absorbed gradually, and sugar levels are only moderately raised, thus preventing insulin surges in reaction and the harmful repercussions on health, and specifically on weight gain, that we nowadays recognize. Since we discovered how to extract white sugar from sugarcane and then from sugar beet, human food has undergone profound changes. With our ever-increasing intake of sweet foods and quick-penetration carbohydrates, providing excellent fuel, carbohydrates are highly suitable for athletes, manual workers, and teenagers. But for the vast majority of sedentary people who make up most of today's societies, they are far from useful. White sugar and all its derivatives, such as confectionery and sweets, are pure carbohydrates, rich and absorbed in no time at all. Starchy foods, even if they do not taste sweet, are just as rich in carbohydrates. They include flour products, bread, in particular white bread, crackers, biscuits, cereals, etc., pasta, potatoes, peas, legumes, lentils, beans. The fruit containing the most carbohydrates are bananas, cherries and grapes, wine and all alcohol, pastries. They are a delicious combination of flour and sugar, and even worse, of fat. Carbohydrates contain only 4 calories per gram, but usually their intake is large, so the calories soon mount up. They are also totally assimilated, which increases their energy yield. Furthermore, we digest starch and flour products slowly, producing fermentation and gas, which causes swelling, as unpleasant as it is unattractive. Whether starch, flour products or sweet tasting, most carbohydrates are very popular. Our affinity for sweet tastes is in part innate. But most psychologists agree that lengthy conditioning starting in childhood makes sweet flavours gratifying as they are associated with rewards. Finally, carbohydrates are almost always the cheapest foods available, which is why they are served at everyone's table, from the richest to the poorest. In conclusion, carbohydrates are foods that are both energy-rich and found everywhere and have such a pleasant taste that they are often used as comfort foods. And as for sweet foods, some people snack on them compulsively. As far as the body's metabolism is concerned, carbohydrates help the secretion of insulin, which in turn encourages fat to be produced and stored. For all these reasons, for a long time, anyone predisposed to being overweight traditionally had to be wary of carbohydrates. Nowadays, they are told instead to be wary of the fat content in foods, which, and rightly so, has now become the overweight person's most deadly enemy. However, this is not a reason to lower one's guard, especially during the attack phase, which has to be as high-performing and rapid as possible. The Dukan diet excludes carbohydrates completely during the attack phase. In the cruise phase, and until the desired weight has been reached, it only allows vegetables with extremely low sugar levels. Carbohydrates make a comeback during the consolidation phase, but it is only during the final stabilization phase, 6 days out of 7, the total restriction is lifted. Lipids. Lipids, or fats, are the absolute enemy of anyone trying to be slim, as they represent, for every living species, the most concentrated form in which surplus energy is stored. Eating fats means you are eating an animal's fat reserves, which in theory, as in practice, stands every chance of increasing your weight. Since the Atkins diet appeared, opening the way for lipids by demonizing carbohydrates, Many diets have adopted this sensationalized point of view, which served its promoter so well. It was quite clearly a major mistake, and for two reasons. Cholesterol and triglyceride levels rise dangerously. Some people paying for this with their lives. And mistrust of fats is gone, and once gone, it makes any form of stabilization impossible. There are two major sources of lipids, animal fat and vegetable fat. Animal fat, found in a virtually pure state in lard, is very much present in pork products, such as pâtés, salamis, sausages, hot dogs, meat spreads, etc. But a number of other animals also supply it. Lamb and mutton, and certain poultry, such as goose and duck, have a plentiful supply. Beef is not as fatty, especially those cuts which can be grilled. Only ribs and ribeye are really rich in fat. Butter, which comes from the creamy top of milk, is practically a pure lipid. Fresh cream, which contains more water, is nonetheless fatty, and its lipid content is around 80%. Among fish, there are five main sources of fat, easily recognisable by their rich taste and blue skin: sardines, tuna, salmon, mackerel and herring. But remember that as fatty as these five fish are, they are no fattier than ordinary steak, and above all, the fat of cold water fish is rich in omega-3 fatty acids, a known safeguard against cardiovascular disease. Vegetable lipids are for the most part represented by the long list of oils and the family of oleaginous fruits. Oil is even fattier than butter. And if some oils like olive, rapeseed or sunflower have nutritional qualities that have been proven to protect the heart and arteries, they all have the same calorific value and should be banned from any weight loss diet, avoided during the consolidation phase and eaten sparingly during the final stabilization phase. As for oleaginous foods, peanuts, walnuts, hazelnuts, pistachios, etc., these are automatic snack foods, often eaten with an aperitif, and the combination with alcohol greatly increases the calorie intake of the meal to follow. For those who want to be slim, or in particular, for those who are trying to lose weight, lipids represent every danger possible. They contain, by far, the most calories, 9 calories per gram, more than double carbohydrates, which provide only 4 calories per gram. Lipids are very rich foods, and so are rarely eaten alone. Oil, butter and fresh cream are often associated with bread, starch, pasta or vinaigrette. The combination increases the overall calorie count considerably. Fats are not assimilated as quickly as fast sugars, but far more quickly than proteins, and so their comparative energy contribution increases accordingly. Fatty foods only reduce our appetite moderately, and snacking on them, rather than proteins, does not reduce our desire for a large meal afterwards, or delay the time before you next feel hungry. Finally, animal lipids, butter, sausages, dried meats, and fat cheeses, with high amounts of fatty acids, pose a potential threat to the heart. For this reason, they cannot be consumed without restriction, as has been the case with the Atkins diet and other regimes inspired by it. Proteins. Proteins are the third universal food group. They form a large group of nitrogenous substances and have the longest molecules that exist in living beings. The foods richest in proteins come from the animal kingdom. Their most prestigious source is meat. Among animal meat, beef is especially high in protein. The leaner cuts are extremely low in fat, but just as rich in protein. Mutton and lamb are visibly more marbled, and this infiltration of fat, which tones down their colour, reduces their protein content. Finally, pork, which is even fattier, is not rich enough in protein to belong to the elite group of essentially protein foods. Kidneys, liver, tongue, sweetbreads, chicken hearts and tripe are very rich in protein and low in fat and carbohydrates. However, liver contains a small dose of sugar. Poultry, with the exception of domestic goose and duck, is a relatively lean meat, very rich in protein, especially turkey and chicken breast. Fish, namely lean whitefish like sole, skate, cod, sea bass or hake, are a goldmine of proteins with a very high biological value. Coldwater fish such as salmon, tuna, sardines or mackerel have fattier flesh, which slightly reduces their protein content, but they nevertheless remain excellent sources of protein, have a delicate and appealing taste, and greatly promote cardiovascular health. Shellfish and other types of seafood are lean and carbohydrate-free, and therefore rich in protein. Some, like scallops, are often not allowed because of their high cholesterol level, but that substance is concentrated in the coral of the animal's head and not its flesh, which means that you can eat prawns, crab, and other seafood without restriction, as long as you take the precaution of removing the coral first. Eggs are an interesting source of protein. The yolk contains lipids and enough cholesterol that should you be predisposed to high cholesterol, excessive consumption should be avoided. On the other hand, egg white is the purest and most complete known form of protein, which gives it the status of benchmark protein, as it is used to classify all other proteins. Plant proteins are found in most cereals and legumes, but these are far too rich in carbohydrates to be included in a diet whose effectiveness depends on the purity of proteins. Furthermore, apart from soya, these plant proteins have a mediocre biological value and are desperately short of certain vital amino acids, so they cannot be used exclusively over a prolonged period of time. So, how can we be vegetarian? It all depends on how this word is defined. If it means just cutting out all red meat, there are many other sources of animal protein, such as fish, seafood, eggs and dairy products, that can provide an ample intake. If it means not eating anything from an animal that has been raised and slaughtered for us to eat, then it becomes more difficult, as this leaves only eggs and dairy products. But this is possible and sufficient for people who are not trying to lose weight. If vegetarian means only eating vegetables, my diet becomes very hard to follow, as there is no other choice but to use incomplete vegetable proteins that have to be very cleverly teamed up with cereals and leguminous plants to ensure that all amino acids are consumed, because without all of them, it is impossible to produce vital proteins. Man is a carnivorous hunter. It is important to realize that man emerged from his animal condition by becoming carnivorous. His ape-like ancestors, like today's great anthropoid apes, were essentially vegetarians, even if occasionally certain apes did hunt other animals for food. Indeed, it was by becoming a group hunter, and therefore a meat eater, that man was able to acquire purely human faculties. The human body possesses a whole system for digestion and elimination that still allows us today to eat unlimited quantities of meat and fish. We are designed to eat animals, meat, fish and poultry, as far as both our metabolism and psychology are concerned. Yes, we can get by without them. And it is possible to live without hunting and without eating animal meat. But by doing so, we give up a part of what our nature expects and we lessen the emotional effect that our body is programmed to produce when we give it what it expects. What I'm saying to you here may seem trivial, but it is absolutely crucial. As the purpose of any living creature, whether animal or human, is to live in such a way that what it does fits with why it has been made that way. Digestion, calorie loss and satisfaction. Of all the food categories, the digestion of proteins is the longest and most laborious. It takes over 3 hours to break down and assimilate proteins. The reason for this is simple. Their molecules are long chains with well-soldered links, and to break down their resistance requires the combination of good chewing, laborious processing in the stomach, and in particular, the simultaneous attack of various gastric, pancreatic, and biliary juices. This long process of calorie extraction greatly taxes the system, and it has been calculated that to obtain 100 calories from a protein food, 30 have to be used up. This particular feature can be summed up by saying that the specific dynamic action of proteins is 30%, while it is only 12% for lipids and just 7% for carbohydrates. What we should remember from this is that when someone wanting to lose weight consumes meat, fish or non-fat yogurt, the person has to work hard simply to digest and assimilate the food, and the calories they use doing this reduces the energy intake from the meal. This really works in the favour of anyone wanting to lose weight. We will explore this at greater length when we explain how the pure protein diet works. What is more, this slow rate of digestion and assimilation delays gastric drainage and increases our sense of feeling full and of satisfaction. The only vital and indispensable nutrient at every meal. Of the three universal food groups, only proteins are indispensable for our existence. Of these three groups, carbohydrates are the least necessary, because our bodies can produce glucose, i.e. sugar, from meat or fat. This is what happens when we are deprived of food or are dieting. We draw upon our fat reserves, transforming them into the glucose that is vital for our muscles and brain. The same goes for lipids. With their excessive intake of sugars and meat, an obese person is expert in both making and storing them. On the other hand, man does not have the metabolic means to synthesize proteins. The simple fact of being alive, of ensuring that our muscular system is maintained, red blood cells renewed, that wounds heal, hair grows, and even that memory functions, all these vital operations require proteins. A minimum of 1 gram per day for every 2 pounds of body weight. Whenever there is a shortage, the body is forced to draw upon its reserves, mainly its muscles, but it also uses its skin or even its bones. This is what happens if unreasonable diets are followed, such as water-based liquid fasting with nothing else, or the Beverly Hills diet based entirely on exotic fruits and made famous by Hollywood stars, who must have lost much of their powers of seduction if they really did follow it. Recently in Europe, a method called detox, or detox diet, which came from the States, has led people to believe that our bodies can be detoxified by eating just fruit and vegetables for a few days. When you realise it has been scientifically proven that after 8 hours without good quality proteins, the body has to draw upon its own muscle reserves to ensure its vital functions, you can understand just how inappropriate such ideas are. They are nothing more than a marketing ploy and a distraction from the real issues. Anyone wanting to lose weight should therefore realise that however restrictive the diet, it should never supply the body with less than 1 gram of protein per day for every 2 pounds of body weight. And most importantly, protein intake should be evenly distributed over the day's three meals. A meagre breakfast, lunch consisting of a pastry and a bar of chocolate, then pizza for dinner with fruit for dessert, are all meals that lack protein and will make your skin dull and impair your body's general strength. The low calorie value of proteins. A gram of protein provides only 4 calories, the same as sugar, but half of what fat provides. Still, the great difference lies in the fact that the concentration of proteins in protein-rich foods is never as high as that of carbohydrates in table sugar or of lipids in oil or butter. Only 50% of all meat, fish, and other food proteins are assimilated. The rest is waste or useless tissue. Therefore, 4 ounces of turkey or steak provides only 200 calories. And when you take into account that your body has to contribute 30% of this calorific value, that is 60 calories just to assimilate it, only 140 calories are left from this tasty and filling food. The equivalent of a tablespoon of the dressing that you deem so harmless as you add it to your salad. These simple facts show you the vital importance of using a diet that dares, for a limited period, to offer only proteins. 2 drawbacks regarding proteins. They are expensive. The cost of protein is relatively high. Meat, fish and seafood can easily make a dent in a modest budget. Eggs, poultry and offal are more affordable but still remain expensive. Fortunately, for some time now, With the availability of non-fat dairy products, it has been possible to get excellent quality protein at a price that allows us to offset the high cost of protein meals. Food high in waste. Unlike most other foods, protein foods are not completely broken down. During their digestion, a certain number of waste products, such as uric acid, remain in the system and have to be eliminated. In theory, eating more of these foods would increase the amount of waste products and cause discomfort to anyone who is predisposed or sensitive to such problems. In fact, the human organs, and particularly the kidneys, have a certain number of mechanisms for elimination and are perfectly suited to this task. But to work efficiently, it is absolutely necessary that the kidneys have an increased quantity of water. The kidneys will filter and remove uric acid from our blood, provided that we increase our normal consumption of water. I had the opportunity to review 60 cases of patients suffering from either gout or uric acid stones. They followed a protein-rich diet and also agreed to drink 3 litres of water a day. Those who were already following treatment continued with it. The others, who had none, did not add any medication. During the diet, there was not a single case of uric acid levels rising. In fact, a third of the patients saw their levels go down. It is therefore essential, when following a protein-rich diet, to keep drinking water, especially during the protein-only phase. This is an opportune moment to deal with the accusations levelled against proteins by those eternal grumpy old rumour mongers who spread the idea that protein-rich foods can strain and even damage the kidneys. These same spoil sports have extended their attack by stating that even water can be toxic for the kidneys if you drink 1.5 litres per day. In 30 years of working with my diet and its unrestricted protein intake, and insisting that my patients must drink at least 1.5 litres per day, I have never had anyone question this. I have even worked with 30 patients who, despite having only one kidney, lost weight without ever noting any change in their renal markers. Apart from the usual prophets of doom, there are also jealous and mischievous people, and in particular some people who could do with losing weight themselves but lack the will to do so, who try to stop others from having a go. To such people I say, come and join us, and let's drink together. Conclusion. Let's highlight some of the fundamental principles of a good weight loss diet. Without doubt, lipids or fat, both from animals and plants, are the greatest enemy for anyone about to embark on a weight loss diet. Even before you start considering the lipid content in meat or fish, just adding up the calories from the lipids in cooking oil, sauces, marinades, dips, butter, cream, as well as the fat found in cheese and sausages, is enough for lipids to be awarded the prize for the highest source of calories. Therefore, an effective, consistent diet has to start by reducing or eliminating lipid-rich foods. You cannot lose your own fat by eating fat from other sources. You must also realize that animal fats alone contain cholesterol and triglycerides. They therefore need to be reduced if there is any likelihood of cardiovascular risk or hypercholesterolemia. For anyone wanting to lose weight, the simple carbohydrate is their other enemy. Not the slow sugars found in whole grains or legumes, but fast sugar and table sugar, which are often assimilated instantaneously and whose very presence encourages the rest of the food to be absorbed. A great substance to snack on, the sweet taste can make you forget just how high the calorie concentration is. Proteins have a moderate caloric value, 4 calories per gram. Those foods richest in proteins, like meat or fish, are interwoven with conjunctive tissue, very resistant to digestion, which means they are not completely assimilated. For an overweight person, who by definition is a great calorie assimilator, getting the most out of anything they eat, this is manna from heaven, as it means they cannot extract all the calories. The dynamic action specific to proteins is equal to the calories used to break them down during digestion. Subtract the energy used for digestion from the energy they contribute, and an additional 30% is saved, far more than all other foods. Never go on a diet with fewer than 2 or 3 ounces of pure protein, as it will rob you of muscle tissue and make your skin dull. Do not worry about uric acid, protein's natural waste product. You will eliminate it entirely by drinking an extra liter and a half of water a day. Remember that the slower a food is assimilated, the longer it takes for you to feel hungry again. Sweet foods are absorbed and assimilated the most rapidly.